Cradio, nourishing the soul of the digital generation.
Catholic Voices is an organisation seeking to improve the Church's representation in secular media. The project was founded in the UK by Dr. Austin Ivory and Jack Valero ahead of the visit of Emeritus Pope Benedict XVI in 2010. It has since spread to 10 countries around the world. Sarah caught up with Dr. Ivory recently to find out more.
So I'm sitting here with Dr. Austin Ivory, who's co-founder of Catholic Voices UK. Thanks for making the time to talk to me today.
Good to be with you, Sarah.
So first of all, could you tell me a bit about what Catholic Voices is and how it got started?
It all started, in fact, with a disastrous debate back in 2009, when the motion was the Catholic Church is a force for good in the world. We had speakers in favour and speakers against. And basically what happened was that an audience that was already pretty against the Catholic Church had turned completely against it by the end of the debate. And my colleague Jack was sitting there and with a friend, and that friend said to him, you know, the more Catholics speak, the more people don't like us, you know. And we about that time, the papal visit of September 2010 was announced. And Jack and I were sitting in London thinking, this is going to be a disaster. We already knew there was a group of protesters against the papal visit, and they had drawn up a list of about 10 things which they regarded as unacceptable and scandalous on the part of the Catholic Church. And that provided us, actually, with the basis. We knew what issues were going to come up, so we decided to form a group, select a number of speakers, who would be kind of young, articulate, ordinary Catholics, not professional church people, not theologians, just ordinary people who could articulate the church's case on these contentious issues compellingly and humanly in such a way that people would actually understand better what the church says on these issues and actually want that, you know. So, well, that was our idea. I can tell you, you know, where we got the idea from and the origins of it, but that was the idea. And then we trained them over 6 months. And when the Pope came in September 2010, we were on more than 100 programmes, and everybody said, you know, this works, this is great, let's do more of it.
I know here in Australia, we tend to have a situation where it almost seems at times like the media are actually looking for voices of dissent. They don't actually want this skilled Catholic voices. How has it been received in the UK, particularly by media, but also by the general public?
Well, a lot of people have two misconceptions about the media. One is that they're out to get the Catholic Church in some way. They have a particular bias against us. And the other one is what you say, that they look particularly for voices of Catholics who disagree with the Church. In our experience, neither of those is true. On the first one, I mean, the fact is that the media gives the Church a hard time, because it gives every institution a hard time, and because actually Catholic positions are very difficult to understand for modern sensibilities. So if you can, but then what they're looking for is somebody who can put that case well, somebody who is good value. And if you provide that, if you are in our one of our little slogans is media friendly and studio ready, if you're those things, you're available, you do a good job, you'll get called back. And on the second, about looking for voices of dissent, again, the reason why the media often does look for those voices is that people who want to put the church's case are just not available. Very often, you know, the church's communications offices are closed for business, you know, because they represent the bishops. And the bishops quite understand, we don't want to be going out on every story and inflaming things. So on the whole, the bishop's media office says no. And the great thing is now, at least in the UK, the bishop's office says, look, we're not putting somebody up, but why don't you call Catholic Voices?
So, being a Catholic voice, you said the media, it'll grill any organisation, and I know particularly so when you see Catholics in the media. What sort of training goes into becoming a Catholic voice to sort of be able to handle those situations effectively?
Just on that point of hostility, we asked all the Catholic voices, we had 25 of them at the beginning of the training course, and we said to them, do you think the media is hostile to the Church? And they all said yes. And after the Pope had gone and they'd been on 100 programmes, we asked them the same question again when we all got together for a kind of celebration. And they all said no. It's very interesting. They had met journalists. They had understood how it worked. And when you understand how it works, you know, you lose your fear of it and the idea that somehow there is this thing called the media that's against us. Of course, you find individual journalists who have agendas and hostility. But on the whole, they discover that if you are able to do a good job and you want to put something compellingly, that the microphone is there for you. So part of our training, part of our preparation of the Catholic Voices is simply to equip them with the familiarity they need with the context of media, to understand how it works. What goes into a 4-minute live interview on a news story where the looking for commentary background, somebody who can comment on a story that's breaking or that's in the news. At the heart of our training, though, and I think this is the reason why I didn't finish that story, by the way. We got to the papal visit, and since September 2010, we've carried on in the UK to do more national speakers trainings. And perhaps the thing that's caught most people's attention, we're now in 10 countries, which has been extraordinary. So Jack and I have spent the last year and a half, we were across the Atlantic 4 times last year. I mean, it's been really quite extraordinary. And Australia is now the 10th country to have Catholic Voices. And I think the reason why people like it and what people are looking for is obviously all the stuff that, you need for this. In other words, good briefings, good media training. But at the heart of what we do, and perhaps our unique thing, is what we call reframing. Now, this is the skill involved in understanding that before a Catholic opens his or her mouth on air, there are already a number of frames, particularly if it's to do with a contentious issue. So even before they've opened their mouth, there is a number of presuppositions which you need to understand before you open your mouth. Because actually, those are often the loudest voices in the room, even though nobody is saying them. Right? Now, in contemporary secular society, those frames are often to do with autonomy, but the church is trying to impose its view. The church has a particular dogma or teaching which it's trying to defend, often against the interests of people or against society. And that has to do with the way contemporary society views institutions and particularly religion. Now, reframing is all about understanding those frames and then working out how you can step outside those frames within a very short time. On the whole, we say in the first 40 seconds of a 3-minute interview, you've either reframed or not. Do you know what I mean? So if you reinforce the frames, even though your arguments are very elegant, people just stop listening. If, on the other hand, you can reframe, it's actually really interesting. It's compelling. It makes for good radio and TV. And it changes the whole dynamic of an interview. So reframing is about getting to the place that we need to get to if we want to discuss these issues. It's about enabling the conversation that we should have. But often, very often, Catholics just don't get there because people have just stopped listening to them. That's what we're teaching in these courses. And I think when you apply the reframing skill or art, and it's a very simple thing, we have a kind of 4-step process, which I can explain in more detail, but reframing at heart is that. And then, of course, there's the hard work of looking at the church's positions on assisted suicide and homosexuality and abortion, euthanasia, and so on. I'm working out your key messages. There's quite a lot of work involved, but the point is that once you understand how it works, you can go on air and be passionate and compelling and progressive and human and all these things. You don't have to be defensive. So that's what reframing is about, and it's about enabling that conversation. And it really works, and people feel very liberated by it. It gives them confidence, and I think it's helped us to change the way the church is seen in the media in the UK.
So, I mean, obviously you mentioned it takes a lot of discipline and a lot of training to be able to do that, but are there certain qualities that make a Catholic voice?
Well, you say it takes a lot of training. I mean, I think the training is fairly intensive, but actually now in the UK, we've reduced it to 3 residential weekends. And then, they're ready to go out, then they're studio ready. Obviously, the more interviews you do, the better you become. And, we don't give everybody the big programs at first. So it is not that much. When we're recruiting new Catholic voices, and we've done now, this year will be the 4th national speakers training program in the UK, and we've done it in different cities each year since 2010. We worked out a good way of selecting people, which is to apply 3 criteria, really. One we call personality, one is called Catholicity. And the other is a sort of awareness one. Now, the first one is about personality. It's simply, when they walk into the room, does the energy lift, And there are some people, this, Sarah, in media, that, they just have that effect when they're on a microphone or in a studio. And other people, tend to slow things down. So we're looking for that kind of personality. We're looking for a certain quality of joy. We're really looking for somebody who's comfortable in their skin as Catholics. And we deliberately reject 2 kinds of people who are both angry with the church and angry with the church leadership, either because they think it's too liberal or because they think it's too conservative. In other words, people who basically think that the church has taken some kind of wrong course since Vatican II, and that's all to do with an argument, as you know, about the Second Vatican Council. We want to transcend all that. We're not interested in either liberals or conservatives. We're interested in mainstream Catholics who love the church, who are happy in the church, who know the church, and that's what Catholicity is also about. We're looking for experience. We're looking for people who can say, you know, in my parish, you know, and speak about it. And on Lourdes, let me tell you what happens when you go on pilgrimage. Let me tell you about World Youth Day. Who've had experiences, living experiences, of the church and of God and of faith, but kind of they've understood the institution. Now, they might be lay, they are mostly lay people, and we're convinced this is a lay vocation, but that doesn't exclude priests religious as well. Usually we're looking for kind of people in their 20s and their 30s, but recently actually we've taken older people in their 40s and 50s. We're looking for people who can think on their feet, obviously. They don't need to know everything about these issues, because that's what the training's about, but they need to be able to be briefed, you know. And the awareness one is really about being well plugged in. I think we're looking for people who follow the news, understand the news a little bit, are interested in the news, and when the church is in the news, you know, they're aware of how the church is being reported. That kind of awareness is we've discovered, a very important quality in a Catholic voice. But apart from that, we don't want them to be, you know, theologians, we want them to be great experts. You know, what's great about them is that they're teachers and lawyers and business people and accountants, and they've got mortgages, and they've got children at home. You know, they're ordinary people. So that when that Catholic voice is on there, and you're at home as a Catholic, you're thinking, yeah, you know, I'm really glad that that person is there making the case for the church, because actually I recognise that they're making it.
Now, put in a high-pressure situation where you have to give an answer, and that could be in the media or it could be in a group discussion at a party, we tend to have, I think, very human reactions that on a level, I think, are instinctual, that do more harm than good. What are some of the pitfalls that we can fall into?
Well, the first one is anger. You know what happens when you get angry is people stop listening to what you say, and they just think, ooh, he's getting angry, you know. And this happens whether you're aware or in a room at pub, you know. So anger is something always to work on. You don't need to be defensive either, because the great thing we've discovered in our training, in fact, the great thing about reframing, is that the way we overcome this defensiveness and this opposition is that we've discovered that behind every criticism of the church's positions on things is a value. And that value, when you look at it, is actually very likely to be the Christian value. Now, it's been distorted, it's been divorced from its theological context, if you use a big word, but it's still a residual Christian value. For example, same-sex marriage, right? Whenever I've done, whenever I do a workshop on same-sex marriage, I stick up, you know, placards on the screen, you know, which says liberty, equality, love, pluralism, acceptance, tolerance. And I say, who wants to be against any of these things, right? And of course, nobody does. And I make a joke of it, as I did in the workshop the other day. I said, would anybody here like to oppose love, you know? And people laugh, and they're right to laugh, because it's ridiculous, the idea that we should be opposing these things. We've got to remember that people who are in favour of things, want to change the law, say, on that, are in favour. Those are the values that they actually hold dear. And they hear us opposing those values, that's when they close off. So we teach people always to look for the positive value and connect with it and affirm it, and then go on to say, not obviously you're not agreeing with the criticism, but you're affirming the value behind the criticism. And then you're going on to explain how you can best fulfil that value. Or it allows you then to have that conversation. This is actually a little bit hard to explain in the abstract. Can I give you an example? Because I think it's the best thing to do. On AIDS and condoms, for example, or in Africa, a lot of people think that the Catholic Church's position on AIDS is all about maintaining a certain position about contraception, and that they're willing for people to die, you know, in order to maintain that position. That innocent people are being sacrificed on the altar of dogma. And of course, that makes people feel angry and indignant. And why wouldn't it? I mean, Jesus put human life before dogma and religion. So if the Catholic Church really were doing that, we would be indignant as well. So I always begin my conversation on this, not by, oh, let me tell you what the Church teaches about contraception. Let's look at the Church's understanding of sexuality. Because that just reinforces the frame that this is about the Church trying to impose something on the rest of society. I start off by saying, you know, the thing about the AIDS crisis is that people are dying unnecessarily. And the Church, which is on the front line of the struggle against AIDS, knows that better than anybody, because it cares for the victims of AIDS like their own institution. And the Church also is very familiar with the different programs to reduce the spread of the virus. And actually, what the Church has said all along on this is that condoms are not a contraceptive technical solution, is not going to work. And they're right. You know, the more condom use is being used in South Africa, actually, the more AIDS is spread. Why? because of a particular kind of serial promiscuity in Africa. I go into this in my book. Look, then you're on to what's the best way of reducing the spread of the virus? You know, is it through these prophylactic methods, or is it through behaviour change and those programmes for asthma, perhaps these fidelity monitoring? Actually, the evidence supports the latter. But do you see what I've done here is I've actually got onto a conversation about, look, how do we save lives? Let's look at the best way of saving lives. And I've escaped the frame, which is the church is condemning people to die because there's no medical assistance, you know, on a particular doctrine. So that's the reframe. So the reframe is about connecting with the concern and the value. All over euthanasia, just to give another example, I would start off by saying, it is wrong that anybody should have to suffer alone or in great pain in the process of dying. That is a scandal in New York, and it happens too much in hospitals. And because it happens so much, that's why actually Christians are pioneering palliative care in the hospice movement, which is all about relieving unnecessary pain and suffering and providing the comfort and support people need on that final journey of healing. And now let's look at what happens if you change the law to assisted suicide. You change the whole framework. But you see, again, I'm starting from the suffering, which is what people are concerned about. When people make a case for assisted suicide, they always start off by saying, look, people are suffering, people are in pain. And so I start off my answer on that by saying, yeah, let's deal with the pain, let's deal with the suffering. It has quite a dramatic impact in any discussion that you're having, in a park, on television or whatever. Connect with the concern, connect with the passion, connect with the indignation, and build your response from there. It really works. It's safe to try it.
One of the things that I struggle with personally, and I think everyone would have this similar experience, is having to give brief answers, because obviously people aren't listening for long. And when you're talking about a lot of Catholic issues, I mean, there's so much complex reason behind that. How do you go about having to put that into a bite?
And that is, of course, part of the big challenge. Partly because we are coming from here from a position of a very broad moral matrix. What I mean by that is Catholics actually care about a lot of things. And what we care about has behind it quite a richness of understanding and reflection. I mean, damn it, our whole church has been around for so long, we've had all this rich theological understanding. And we're speaking to a culture which has often reduced moral concerns to a very narrow moral matrix. So we're speaking from place of breadth to a place of narrowness. And that's part of our problem. On the same-sex marriage debate, I can tell you, in the UK, it's been very, very difficult because, you know, what we want to do is have a conversation about what happens when you redefine marriage. What are the consequences of that? Why does the state support marriage? You know, it's all about children. So, but the response you often get is, look, this is about equality. No, it's about gay rights, so it's about equality. They want to shut down the debate because they say, oh, it's about this. So breaking out of that is very hard. So yeah, no, being succinct is a challenge. And what we do is, obviously, the reframing is vital to prepare your key messages. And then we always say to Catholic voices that, you know, you do your reframes, and then you get your three maybe key messages. That's what you're going to aim in to communicate in that 4-minute interview, or frankly, that 4-minute exchange in the pub, because it's actually the same kind of a rhythm and the same kind of compactness. So what are you doing is, I think you're not giving somebody a lecture. You're first of all connecting with their concern, and then you're quite briefly, I suppose, summarising, saying what you think it's really about. So on the marriage issue, I say, you know, I've really looked at this. I don't think it's an issue about gay rights at all. It's an issue about what is marriage, why the state supports it, and what the effect of redefining it will have on children. Whereas what I try and do is I get out my reframe quite early on, and then often people say, oh, okay, well, let's talk about those things. At least you've managed to shift the debate onto where you're going to be. Look, above all, it's a conversation. And, you know, I'm not giving a very good example of this here, but you should always be letting the other speak as well. You know, because actually, people come to truth and they come to greater awareness in a series of stages. Given too much too soon, they shut down.
You mentioned earlier you have a book. You go into these things in more detail.
So I have a book called How to Defend the Faith Without Raising Your Voice, which is a US edition published by Ars Sunday Visitor. It's available on Amazon, and I'm delighted that in Sydney this week people have been coming up to me saying that they bought it and read it and love it. So I'm delighted by that. What I would really like to see is an Aussie edition of that, and I've been talking to a publisher this week. So it needs, obviously, Aussifying in the sense that, you know, we need to hear the statements from the Australian Missions Conference rather than the US Missions Conference. But the key ideas are in that book, and the reframes and the key messages and all the rest of it, and people found it very useful. The other thing we have put at the end of the book, which we also teach in our training, is what we call our 10 principles of civil communication. I won't list them all here, but you know, they're things that we've learned doing this that work well, that help us to reflect on this work, what we call the new apologetics. For example, witnessing, you know, when you engage in these kind of debates, the object is not to win. If you try and win a debate, you may end up losing 2 million people watching it. You know. So focus not on the other person you're debating with, but on the 2 million who are listening to you. And your object is to witness, your object is to show and demonstrate. We say, you know, show, don't tell, as a writer's principle. And the last one, which I like very much, is, one of the first ones really, very important, which I like very much, is it's not about you. And we discovered this one because early on in the training, some of the Catholic voices know they're going to go on air, you know, they become very self-conscious. Oh, you know, people are going to see me. They're going to think, oh, that's Fiona, or that Sarah saying that. And I would say, you know, this sounds brutal, guys, but you know what? Nobody knows who you are. Nobody cares. You're not a public figure. They're not interested. They're just going to see a Catholic. They're going to see, you know, Mary, da-da-da, Catholic voices. They don't know who you are. So forget all that. You are a Catholic. You are speaking as a Catholic. You are representing the church, not the bishops, you're representing the church. And it's the same in a pub. You know, if somebody gets into a conversation with you, you're a Catholic, you know, don't take it personally. If they start giving you a really hard time over gay rights or whatever it is, it's not about you, you know. Relax, you know, it's because the church is an obstacle. The church is an obstacle in contemporary society. It is a stumbling block for many people. And people get indignant when they run into that stumbling block. And they're turning to you and they're saying, no, explain, how can you justify that? They're not turning away, they're turning towards you. And they're saying, often angrily, often quite testily, they're saying, justify that. So what we say is, controversy is opportunity. There's no such thing as bad news. Everything is an opportunity. When the microphone comes to you, when someone turns to you in the pub, and the spotlight falls on you, take advantage and communicate.
Great, thank you. And I know that book has come highly recommended, so we'll post a link on our website, but we'll look out for the Australian edition as well.
You're very kind. Thank you very much, sir.
Thanks so much for your time.
To find out more about Catholic Voices, head to catholicvoices.org.uk. And for more interviews, talks and programs, visit cradio.org.au.
cradio.org.au